You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, and this is the Locked and Loaded edition. David, the reason I'm saying that, of course, is because of the oil crisis. And it is sort of a mini crisis, isn't it? The oil price was up around 15 to 20% at one stage on certain thin markets last night. It's calmed down a little bit now, and the S&P has calmed down a little bit as well. But it really is a shot across the bows for the bulls of the stock market.
Yeah, look, we don't know where this is going, where this is heading. The news coming across now is that Iran was responsible for it, you know, for this attack. And if that is the case, then there's going to be some kind of repercussions. Now, I don't know how that's going to be investigated, but the Saudis seem to think it was Iranian, you know, inspired by the Iranians. And look, for the meantime, the markets have been okay. You know, they haven't overreacted. They haven't gone mad other than the oil price, but I think even that is going to settle down, or the market is suggesting that it's going to settle down and not really run away. You know, that the gap that the Saudis leave will be filled by perhaps some other producers, or, you know, within a short time, oil will be restored. So I think the market is at this stage, as things are, it seems to be absorbing it. It's the problem is what comes next, whether there is any geopolitical fallout, particularly in that region. And I mean, that's the that's the danger that does face the market. But for meantime, I think it's pretty calm. You know, besides the oil price, I watch the gold price. Gold price has done nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. Even treasuries or other safe havens haven't really responded. And I'm looking at equity markets now. The US markets seem to be just brushing it aside. And the early pullback that we've seen, or earlier losses, seems to be recovered now.
The fact is that what the market is saying is that there's going to be no war and there's going to be no oil shortage. The most immediate concern was the oil shortage, and obviously the people that had contracts entered into with Aramco have to go elsewhere, and Aramco will obviously have insurance and let other people supply them. But the first thing is no oil shortage, because Trump has just said that he will allow strategic reserves to be released. There's also Aramco strategic reserves in places like just around the corner from me in Amsterdam. So it can't be immediate, but they will release these oil tankers and they will go off and fulfill their contracts, and away we go. So there's no oil shortage, I don't think, in the short to medium term, and there's going to be no war. Whether there's going to be no war, I don't know, because Mr. Trump seems to want to have some sort of legacy. He's failed with the wall, he's failed with North Korea, he's now he needs something to say, this is what I did which Obama didn't do, and wipe out Iran. Or
does he want to do that? Because I
yes,
think against
does.
That backdrop, you had Bolton, who wanted to do that. He's been fired, I think. I think Trump was taking a much easier stand. He wanted to meet with the Iranians and try and woo them, or try and do something else. I don't think he really wanted to be, you know, bombing them. But so I'm not quite sure where this places Trump. I don't know what his generals are going to say to him, but he appears to be in the middle, because I think he wanted to be a peacemaker. I think he wanted to be the man who renegotiated the Iranian contract and got them to give up all their nuclear weapons and so on, and a much tighter deal than Obama had negotiated. So I don't know where this leaves him. I'm not sure that he's a warmongering person and wants to start pressing buttons, as we're seeing in Afghanistan at the moment. But it's still fluid at this stage. But I think the market seem to be, you know, much more at peace than maybe the media are.
Yeah, the S&P was down 20 to 25 points in the early hours of this morning when the S&P futures contract opened for online trading. It's currently down only around about 5 points. So the market is incredibly sanguine about this sort of thing. The world is well supplied with oil, and Mr. Trump is making soothing approaches to Iran. And yeah, everything's fine again. Whereas maybe in the 90s or even the 80s, this sort of event would have caused chaos on the markets, David.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt the gold price would have shot up. Oil price seems to have, you know, it seems to have knee-jerked upwards and that. But I would imagine after a couple of days we'll start to see this, we'll start to see it settle down. So that's where we are. It's a rather dull kind of market, although on the local market, things seem to be pretty brisk and running away. I'm not sure what the big drivers are here. It doesn't reconcile with the rest of the world. You know, we seem to be on a ride up, and I'm not sure whether I've missed any news. It's something that's happening that that I haven't quite picked up. But, you know, wherever I look now, everything seems to be going up across the board. So all is forgiven. Yeah, locally.
quite right. Let's just go through one set of results, which I spoke about this morning on the opening with Greg Davies and a chap called Nick Kunze from Sandland Private Wealth, and they both didn't want to talk about it. A company called Afrox. Now, I think of companies that sort of epitomise the old school South African company, it would be AECI, Afrox, and maybe a couple of others. Now, nobody knows anything about Afrox anymore. What do you know about Afrox?
No, you know, Afrox used to be one of the, it used to win the prizes for reporting. It was a very, very well followed business here and a highly successful business, supplying gases, number one, to the welding, you know, welding gases to the manufacturing industry and virtually to every industry and also to the hospitality industry as well as the medical industry. You know, all those big cylinders of oxygen that you see at hospitals, these were all Afrox, and all the gas cookers that you see at in restaurants, Afrox, and so on. Heating, Afrox. So a very, very good company. I'm not quite sure why it went off the rails, whether it was management or not. They're trying to get it back. I think got a little bit of a boost from the health industry there, but still a long way to go to get back to former glory. And I would imagine that until we see manufacturing picking up dramatically, we're not going to get much out of it. It's just one of those businesses. I haven't followed it as close as I used to, but I see it was a fairly respectable result, but a bit too early to, you know, to cheer a comeback from Afrox.
Yeah, indeed.
When you look at it, I'm just going to get the latest now. When you look at it, Lindsay, this is a market capitalization of $7 billion, which is nothing, which is tiny in today's market. It used to punch a lot above its weight. I wouldn't say above its weight, but it used to punch much more on the market now. But I suppose with a lack of growth over such a long period, it's just lost that that appeal. Look, it's up about 6% today, I think, on a slightly better result than the market was expecting. But still, at $7 billion, it's not the kind of share that you can really throw a lot at.
Let's look at the shares that have moved today. We've spoken about Sasol. Sasol now close to R300 a share, up nearly 8%. Assor up 6.4%. MC Group up 5.4%, which is unusual. Aspen up 4.5%, pushing 100 as well, and Pick and Pay up 4.5%. So some diverse companies there, but also South African focused, which I quite like, as well as a bit of international here and there. But it says that people are starting to look at South Africa again and the JSE Securities Exchange and say maybe we've been too unkind in the last few months.
Okay.
Your comment, please.
What I'm trying to say to you is that, well, against what backdrop do we attribute this? And what's going to happen to Pick and Pay? Are the results going to shoot up? Do we get any clue in the market that things are turning around? At best, we can say that things are stabilizing, and I don't see them stabilizing. You know, there's no evidence that consumers are suddenly picking up and confidence is rising and people are spending. There's nothing around that. And that's my big worry, is that I think this is just trade is taking advantage of a turnaround in momentum. You know, I can't justify a lot of these movements. Yes, Aspen, things are looking better. You know, they were down at R65 after the scare on their debt looking much better. But do I see Aspen going to 130, 140, 150? Not on the evidence of the last set of results. There's no suggestion that their operating profits are going to turn around, you know, in any big way. So we're looking at sub, or put it this way, single figure growth rates for the next few years, which I suppose at 7 or 8 PE is maybe justifies these prices, but not much more. And I think that really sets out what our market is all about. Pick and pay, you know, what can they really do from these kind of levels other than maybe steal some customer support from some of the other supermarkets, maybe ShopRite under a bit of pressure. But it's very difficult to, you know, to get excited about this market.
On the downside, we've got Interprop down 4.5%, African Rainbow Minerals down 2.3%, Hammerson a 2.1% loser, Goldfields down 2%, and Itel Tile, we don't need to talk about that, but anyway, down nearly 2%. We're coming towards the end of the third quarter of 2019. I just wonder when you look back at the previous three quarters, it started really badly. It's got a little bit better in the third quarter. I wonder what the fourth quarter will bring.
Well, look, if global markets hold their own and conditions start improving in the global economy, we don't see anything worse. If there's a move towards a trade deal between China and US, and once global markets start picking up, it has a natural, uplifting effect on our market. So I think you'll see our market picking up, but can we justify it? Does it mean that we're going to run up to new heights? I can't see it. I don't see it on the sets of results and the numbers that we've seen in the previous three quarters, as well as the outlook from CEOs or from managers. They just don't give you a hint that everything's good. We don't see, you know, if you look at the manufacturing numbers that came up, mining once again starting to falter, manufacturing has faltered, all the confidence indices point towards tough conditions, even the retail sales. So, that's going to be my guideline, but I'm not going to stop a market if it wants to go better. You know, I'm not, if you want to play in this market and push it better, that's fine. But it's whether it's sustainable or not, Lindsay. I don't get that feeling. I don't know. I don't know what the other people that you talk to, you know what's happening as well. I'm just looking at gold shares. We had three bad days of gold shares falling on, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I know you always mock me and always go at me.
Tease is a better word.
and we've had a wonderful run in gold shares, and I recognize it. But that's starting to show a little bit of – it's laboring at the moment.
Yeah, you're quite
and
right.
I thought maybe it would turn around today with the situation in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia. But it hasn't. It's lost momentum. You know, once more, gold shares under a bit of pressure. Yes, the index is up today. But I would have thought it would have been a much stronger showing today.
Exactly what I said this morning to Greg Davies. I said to him, the fact that it's only up $10, $12, something like that, tells you that this is a tired bull market, and it should have been up $30, $40, and it should have been pushing the highs. Exactly right. The world just suddenly says to itself, well, you know what? Oil price doing this, but there's loads of oil. We don't need a safe haven. The stock market's okay. The S&P was down 25 at one stage. It's only down 5 at the moment. I agree with you entirely on that one, despite the fact I would love to see a gold bull run. The other thing that's really interested me is the euro dollar exchange rate, which is about to break 110.
That's interesting.
Which is very interesting. It's a 0.6. No, it really is. Because, I mean, you think a 0.6% move of the euro against the US dollar doesn't sound like much, but for such a massive, massive market, this is incredibly, incredibly important. This is a multi-month high for the dollar against the euro. The euro only now buys 1.1009 US dollars. And, that is significant to me.
There are a lot of worries about Europe. Deep concerns about where they're heading. In fact, the lead article in the Economist this weekend was about Europe and how wrong they've gone, you know, and how they need to swing things around. And of course, we heard from Draghi last week exactly the situation that they find themselves in, that they need stimulus and they need to get themselves going. Although I must say, in your part of the woods, the Dutch, the Germans, and the French are still reluctant to take any dramatic action. But I mean, the market's beginning to tell you exactly how traders are feeling about the euro. So action has to be taken. I think the worry that they're going to lower rates and, you know, and also stimulate the economy once more, I think is just scaring people a bit. And yet underneath there, there's still effect. If you look at the market now, I think there's also concerns about the Chinese numbers that came in that also show that that economy is still struggling a little and not also needs stimulus. So it's affecting, you know, it affects Europe, which is fundamentally an exporter. It has a very strong current account surplus and needs exports. And if China and other markets start to slow down, of course, it hurts them.
Yeah, indeed.
So put it all together, Lindsay, you know, if you listen to what we're saying, if you listen, to try and actually put it all together and to try and draw a line through it and decide an action is not that easy. You know, there's so many counterforces and so many things acting against each other and so many, you know, data points. It's not an easy market to read. It's not a gimme. You know what I mean? It's not a simple, there's no simple strategy to this.
No, there's not. David, let's move away from the markets now and talk about two other things. The first thing is the death of Robert Mugabe. Your family is inextricably linked to the struggle, so-called.
My wife's family, yeah.
Yeah, precisely. But, I mean, you're married to your wife, so therefore you are linked as well. And you embrace her sympathies or her family's sympathies in the past. But I find it really, really strange that a man that has killed tens of thousands of his own countrymen has driven an economy that could have been the powerhouse of Africa into the ground, brought it to its knees. In fact, more than its knees, he killed it. And there are still people that go there and laud this fellow. What is your attitude towards this?
Well, you know, in the early stages, in 1980, when he took power, I think he was a man that one could look up to, but only within a few months of him taking power did we start to see trouble erupting. And it continued, and the more power that he got, the worse the economy became and the worse we were dragged down. And towards the end, as you summed up, he took an economy that had, or a country that had everything from tourism to mining to agriculture, and is bankrupted. Today it's poverty stricken. Yeah. And I mean, it's a very sad African story. How we can laud him, you know, from that point of view. I mean, people now who are desperately poor can still, you know, hold him up or in the esteem that the rest of the world is holding up, or even some of our leaders are doing, it's staggering. And it's an African story. I mean, he's not the only country that has been dragged to its knees. And I think that my worry is that we're a country that can go the same way with some of the, you know, if you read some of the tweets that were sent out by the EFF just lauding this man and for nothing more than being anti-white. That's it, you know, just for the anti-white statements.
Do you really think that's what it is?
Well, I don't know what else it is. You know, any common sense or any person with any kind of common sense, when you read what he said, would be turned off by it or certainly turned away. And these are highly inflammatory racist statements that Robert Mugabe made over his time, which the EFF now are highlighting or exposing. And you've got to say, hold on a sec, this is not the way out of the mess that we're in. You know, regardless of colonialism, this is not the way we're going to get out of this mess. And this is what worries me. And I'm not taking any political stand on colonialism at all. I mean, I've got my views on the British and the various people that robbed Africa, but still, it's you know, Lindsay,
the
when
Belgians
you read this,
as well,
this is,
and the French.
Yeah,
don't single us out.
I know. I'm not going to.
No,
what I'm
mean.
Trying to say is that I, you know, we need a different attitude to turn this place around. We need everybody to contribute, and I don't think kicking out the whites or expelling the whites or hating the whites is going to be the way that things turn around here. You know, there are a lot of us that actually want to contribute to the turnaround and are willing to do anything to get this country going again. So,
are you saying then we should forgive the people that are living today in South Africa and the rest of Africa should forgive and forget? Not forget,
but start to forgive
and say, embrace the people that are now in power. So what are you saying?
I know
Are you saying to the EFF, just forget about it and let's get on with it together?
What I'm trying to say is I don't mean forget about it. I don't mean that I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that that's not the solution at this stage, you know, because their statements are highly inflammatory. I'm getting a bit tongue-tied here, but I'm certainly not defending apartheid or that government by a long way. We all fought against it. We all fought for a better country. And that's where my in-laws came in. You know, they went to jail fighting for what they believed in. And we thought we had that in 94. And perhaps that's where I'm going. We had it in 94, yet we're moving away from that. You know, we're moving far away from those ideals that were set in the Constitution in 94. And, you know, we're continuing with a blame game, and we continue to single out whites as perhaps the reason that we're in the position. Get rid of the whites and everything will come right. And that's not the truth. That's far from it. So, you know, I just want to get on with trying to save South Africa and pick up growth here. As many other people here, hardworking people who spent their lives here, are trying to do that. Certainly my wife's family, that's what they fought for. You know, they would have freaked if they would have read what Malema is saying. You know, this is certainly not what their ideals were at all. I hope that makes sense. I'm not.
It really does make sense, actually, but it's given me so much to think about. I wonder if Mr. Malema was. It'd be wonderful. I've got his mobile number. I'd love to get him on for a chat with you and have a reasoned discussion with him. But I don't think that's going to be possible. But anyway,
no.
Yeah, he's a volatile young man. But what I do like about him is his passion. I just don't like the way he goes about projecting his passion. If you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think also, you know, there's got to be a reasonable economic understanding to get this country right, you know.
Mm.
You need skills, you need capital, you need all those elements to turn around where we are at the moment. So you need everybody. You know, you can't exclude a certain factor just because of the color of the skin. You can't say you're white, therefore this is not your country. I think a lot of people were born here, have worked very hard here, and want to see a better life for all. And so I don't think the Mugabe route, which is where we're getting to, is the way out of our mess. I don't think that's going to help us in any way. So before you expel everybody, I think just give us a chance to turn things around. And, you know, once we're thriving, then we'll see. But it's not going to be in my lifetime.
No, nor mine. David, let's talk about football now.
I hope this doesn't go the wrong way.
You've eloquently articulated your feelings, and I think a lot of people will be sympathetic to your cause, as I am as well. David, let's talk about football now. I've been trying to think of an analogy for the Arsenal performance in the second half against Watford yesterday, and I thought of this one. When I was young, I've always been tall, but when I was young, I was occasionally asked to dance. You know, you go to a student union disco or something like that in the late 1980s, and you have to dance away. And I didn't like dancing. I think dancing is stupid, and I was crap at dancing. So the best way I can describe it is I would look like a giraffe playing golf when I was dancing. But people used to say to me the following: Lindsay, don't worry about that. Have a drink and dance like nobody is watching you. Now, I thought about Arsenal playing in the second half against Watford yesterday, and I thought that somebody has said to them, play football like nobody is watching you. And they were terrible. They were awful. They were like me dancing. They were terrible.
I know. They were amateurish. And I don't think there's any way to describe the way they played. It's almost as though they wanted to walk off the field and not kick the ball. That these are people who are paid very, very high wages on a weekly basis and who are supposedly skilled. They showed nothing of the sort. And, you know, at least Man City lost to Norwich, and Norwich played with their heart.
Passion.
But Man City were good. They still had the skills. It's just that Norwich defended so well and held them off. But Arsenal were just pathetic. And I just worry about the manager. I wonder if there's the right kind of attitude there, and I just worry where they are. You know, yes, they played incredibly well against Spurs and came back and showed that they had heart, and then it lasts a week and they're gone. You know, and you need consistency, and they just haven't got it. You never know who's going to turn up the next week. You know, and that's not what you need. You know, we need the Steve Smiths. You know, we need a person of Steve Smith's character.
You're talking about Steve Smith, the Australian batsman.
The best batsman
in the world. He's incredible.
Yeah.
I hate him. No matter what the pitch,
no matter what the, you know, what the weather's like, who's bowling, etc., he's just there.
Don't you think there should be some kind of new system where, you know, you're going to go to play for Arsenal or Liverpool or Manchester United, like Paul Pogba is, who's my least favourite footballer in the world ever. You go to your club and you have to sign a contract to say it's a performance bonus. If we win, or if you score a goal, or if you have a certain amount of assists, then you'll get paid this amount of money. But you can't get £225,000 a week if you're just going to turn up in your limousine, half drunk from the night before, and not contribute to the team. I think it should be performance based, and I really think that would reform and transform the way that football works. I hate the fact that they just turn up every week and get so much money for doing nothing.
Watford's in the north of London. It's not too far away. The bus ride wasn't all that long. So it wasn't though they were tired. I mean, it's close to home, but hell, yeah. I agree with you. I just think that they should be fined, you know, or certainly there should be some deduction for such a poor performance. The fans, you let down your fans.
Pay £100 a week to go and watch these strutting peacocks, these popinjays. Mm-hmm. And it's actually offensive. I watch Paul Pogba, you are a disgrace to football. He turned up once at a training ground at Manchester United. He was in a Bentley. And a chauffeur came out and opened the door for him. And what does that send out to the young players?
No.
I mean, come on now.
I know, yeah.
David,
he doesn't want pain.
We're getting off the subject here. Thank you so much for your time. That's David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. By the way, David, your results are out tomorrow. Are you going to give us a good analysis of those?
Well, I see the shares are up about 10%, but they did give a warning that results could be up, I don't know, 20-30%. Remember, they're coming off a very low base.
Okay.
But
we'll chat tomorrow.
At least we're moving in the right direction.
Okay. Jolly good. Yes. Thank you, David. That's David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.